Apple created a stir last month when it was discovered the iPhone was storing years of data tracking a user's location. Apple says its latest software update allows people to opt out, but the FCC is moving forward with a public forum next month anyway. It will come as researchers are using cell phone data to explain political divides. In London, an iPhone app called Mappiness is determining the happiest moment of the week, by the way, 8 p.m. Saturday. Other cell phone research claims to predict changes in the stock market or even when you get sick? Professor Alex Sandy Pentland directs MIT's Human Dynamics Laboratory at the MIT Media Lab. He says cell phones give us a God's eye view of human behavior. So, of course, we want to hear more. And Sandy joins us. Welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
What do you mean, God's eye view of human behavior?
Well, if you imagine watching all of the people at the same time, where they're going, who they're calling, and what they're doing, I think the best word for it is God's eye.
An aerial view, almost.
An aerial view. First of all, it can record some of this data, and some of it needs just to operate. But if you look at the patterns that are in the data, you can tell all sorts of interesting things about people. So, for instance, you can see when people are getting sick, when they're coming down with the flu.
This is amazing. How?
Well, you know, we're all apes, you know, have certain biology. When we're coming down with the flu, we scurry around a little bit more. We try to retreat a little bit. We call only our friends, things like that.
You eat mashed potatoes. Oh, wait, that doesn't have anything to do with
you. That's not on your cell phone. But just those simple patterns.
And you're
saying
there's some sort of equivalent comfort behavior that you do on your cell phone.
That's right. And similarly, you can see behaviors that indicate that you're likely to have a poor night's sleep. You move around differently, you call different people, you behave a little bit differently with respect to your phone. And you can see behaviors which give a good odds that you're not going to sleep very well tonight.
Isn't that something? And by the way, this is one of the things you're interested in, learning about health and what cell phones can tell, cell phone usage can tell us about health. But some of those other studies I mentioned, for instance, researchers trolled millions of tweets in 2008 and saw that the moods expressed in the tweets sort of predicted the direction of Wall Street. In Belgium, they tracked both Flemish and French-speaking communities, the two communities in Belgium, and realized that they never spoke to each other, even if they were next-door neighbors, and sort of explained the divide over the government. In Britain, they just used people as a focus group, asking them to reply, you know, through their cell phones about when they were happiest. So there's all different ways you can get this information. Talk to us about that for a second. In some cases in this research, cell phone companies have turned over records and blocked out people's names. Some people have asked people to participate in studies. How are you doing it?
Well, we're interested in the fact that as people move around in the world today, they leave all these digital breadcrumbs around. So you don't have to interrupt them. You don't have to bother them and disturb what they're doing to be able to get some of this passive sort of data, like where are you, when you made the phone call, and so forth. We recruit people just like a medical study.
Ah.
We sign them up. We give them a disclosure form. They can opt out anytime we want. We pay them. We usually give them fancy new phones. And in return, what they give us is they allow us to record all of their behaviors so that we can better understand things like, how do people behave when they're getting sick? How do people make decisions about health? How do ideas spread through a community? So there's a basic science here, not just health science, but also decision science. And the things that we find is that a lot of the ways we think about ourselves are really fundamentally very wrong. So we're not really as rational as we think we are. If you want to change people's behaviors, giving them arguments is probably the wrong thing to do. In fact, most of the decisions you make about behavior are a sort of when in Rome, do what the Romans do behavior. You know, if the people around you are all doing X, you're likely to do it too. And you can sort of think of this. If you live in a place or work in a place where everybody takes the third slice of pizza, what are you going to do? You're going to take the third slice of pizza.
Absolutely. And this is why you are one of those who thinks that, for instance, obesity is contagious, because you see it. You see it in the behavior that you see through these cell phones?
Yeah. So we actually did a study of that, and it's the role models around you that you pick up on, apparently unconsciously, that influence your decision to take that third slice of pizza.
But again, how do you see that through looking at cell phone data?
So we look at the cell phone data, and then we also pester people with questions. So we ask them questions all the time on their cell phone. At night, they fill out big forms for us. They weigh themselves. We do all sorts of stuff.
They use them as a focus group. It's a great resource.
It's a big focus group, right. Last 9 months. And what you get to see is you get to see what are the behaviors that lead to decisions.
Well, and I found one that was fascinating. You did research during the 2008 presidential elections and were able to determine how people would vote. Now, cell phones were involved. Tell us more about what that study was.
Well, the study was, again, we gave cell phones to a whole group of people that all lived together. And we also pestered them with questions like, how politically active were you? Were you Republican? Were you Democrat? Who are you going to vote for? And what we found was the changes in political opinion were not a function of what their friends did, but they were correlated with who they spent time with.
And you know this because these smartphones you gave these, well, they were college students in a dorm, had sensors that could pick up when they were having random face-to-face encounters, as opposed to dates with friends or watching campaign advertising. And you determined it was those face-to-face encounters that led a third of the students to change their political views.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
And fascinating, so that you used all this electronics and this technology to discover that what actually influenced people most was these face-to-face encounters they had with other people.
That's right. And a good example of why you care about that is if you're going to do a public health campaign, you better know that. We all get these information flyers that say, oh, did you know X, Y, and Z? And they really don't change the way we behave. But now we know a lot more about what actually does change behavior, and we can begin crafting interventions to, you know, combat obesity, combat other sorts of things.
Knowing that people have influence over each other.
Yeah.
But there is a sort of a darker side to this, that advertisers are really watching what you're doing.
You bet.
And they're seeing, wow, my billboard or my campaign ad didn't really impact that person. Walking up and talking to another person impacted that person.
The big issue here is around privacy and who controls all that information. And right now it's sort of a Wild West. So anybody who can get the data has the rights to have it. And what I've been trying to do is lead a discussion with, you know, the CEOs of companies and the regulators to find sort of a win-win solution. And I've gotten everybody to pretty much agree that individuals ought to have a lot more control over their data. So the stuff that we just sort of scattered to the winds now ought to be something that you know about and have more control over. And what the companies want to have in return is the ability to ask you about that. To say, look, you know, if you're in San Francisco 6 months a year and you make more than $50,000, I'd like to give you some coupons. And they'd like to be able to check with your information to make sure that you're validly in San Francisco on more than $50,000. And then they'll make you that offer and you get to say yes or no.
Professor Sandy Pentland of MIT's Media Lab has been telling us that cell phones show human interaction impact people more than advertising. He's been interested in that for its health aspects, but he's also working with advertisers to try to figure out how they can use our data with our permission, a tricky slope. But Sandy, pick up there. Advertisers are already using guerrilla advertising, you know, creating influencers, paying college kids to say go to a bar, then tweet other people to come down and taste a new drink. It seems like they're already onto this.
Well, they're onto it a little bit, but the other part of that particular theory is that there are these really influential culture leaders, and that doesn't seem to be true. The guerrilla marketing stuff doesn't actually seem to work very well at all. Huh. What does seem to work is you have to sort of carpet bomb a group of people to get enough people to try it at the same time that you can get the thing to tip and everybody begins to do it.
This whole idea of this aerial view of all of us on our cell phones, now realizing that this God's eye is seeing all of us wherever we go because there's GPS on our phones, is knowing who we're calling, is seeing us get frenetic before we get sick. Is this like the already existing sciences that study, oh, how migratory birds seem to be able to fly and get themselves in Vs, or how traffic seems to, you know, all go in a circle? Is it the same kind of?
It's the same type of thing. It's what Jane Goodall does with apes, right? Mm. And we're now doing it with ourselves. But it's actually really important because our society has a lot of problems, like traffic is one, energy use is another. These diseases like H1N1 is another. We don't seem to be able to govern ourselves the way we used to be. It's all very contentious and so forth. So if we can know a lot more about how humans behave, what are the real patterns, then we can build transportation systems that are green. We can stop the diseases spreading. And we may even learn how to govern ourselves better.
What else? Give me some more concrete research that you've done.
Well, the big things that we're interested in are, can we look at how people make decisions, how they learn as a society. And what we're finding at lots of different scales is that the most important thing is that people be exposed to lots of different ideas. That sounds like common sense, but it's not true in many parts of our society. There are these information ghettos, so places where they don't talk to many people in the neighborhood and they're not much attached to the rest of society. And whenever we see that, whether it's in a company, whether it's in a community, the outcomes are not very good. And that we can use things like cell phones to be able to measure whether a particular community is healthy or not healthy.
Well, and I know you did a recent project with Bank of America. You tracked employees and helped them save $15 million. How did you do that?
So we went into a call center, and we didn't use cell phones because cell phones don't work inside call centers very well. We have these little name badges that have some electronics in them. And what we noticed was that the most productive employees were the ones that talked to all of the other employees. Chatterbots, right? Now, what's interesting is that the call center was managed to discourage that as much as possible. So they gave coffee breaks separately to every different person so that they wouldn't talk to each other. And what I convinced them to do was to change that, to give them all coffee breaks together so the employees could talk to each other. And guess what? All of a sudden, they talked to each other, they could trade tips, and productivity went up sharply. Mm. And also the employees were a lot happier. So that means that there's less turnover. So it saved a lot of money for Bank of America.
All good there. But I'm thinking of another piece of research in which researchers realized they could predict who was going to change their cell phone carrier by whether or not their friends did. And they can use this to sort of target, they see in a cell phone group, one person has changed, and they can predict that the others will change as well.
Mm-hmm.
That starts to get scary, you know,
it's
because
spooky,
then you're
going
to start getting targeted by a cell phone carrier that knows you're about to change.
Yeah, so that's one of these issues where whose data is that? Is that the data of the cell phone company, or mm-hmm. is that data that's your data? And I argue that you ought to be more in control of that. I mean, if you want to get an offer, that's fine, but you shouldn't be targeted. And that's the scary part of all this stuff is, you know, you can solve a lot of our big problems in society. You can make things really work well. But you also are opening up this Pandora's box of being targeted for all these things.
How can you tell when someone's going to get diabetes by their cell phone usage?
Well, it's not so much the calling. It's where they go and where they spend time and how they get there. And you can imagine pretty easily that if you go to these sorts of restaurants and you always drive and you never walk, that you might be in a crowd that is going to be at greater risk of diabetes. That's right.
Has that followed through?
Yeah. Also, obesity. That's another sort of at risk. Anything that's a disease of behavior, if you're a member of a behavioral group that is different than others, then your disease risk is going to be different. You know, when I look around, I see that we're facing, you know, global warming. We have congested, polluted cities. We have diseases that are spreading. We don't know how to organize our society to be able to make things work. And the way you cure that is you get data about the things that matter so that you can do a better job of organizing yourself. Smartphones give you a great way to do that. It also gives you a way to reach out to people just in time so they can make better decisions all the time, just in time.
Do you foresee an alert? We've been watching where you're shopping and eating. You could get diabetes.
Well, there is a movement called the Quantified Self Movement that does exactly that sort of thing. So people log all the information about themselves, and then they try to figure out things like, what could they do better?
Huh.
So it's a reflective tool to help you make better choices.
But as you point out, they participate because they want to participate.
That's
right.
Right. Yeah. So it's, again, it's about who owns the data and being able to opt in.
Professor Sandy Pentland, he directs MIT's Human Dynamics Lab. It's in their MIT Media Lab. Sandy, Professor, thanks so much.
My pleasure.